Trading In Trade Representatives. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. The president-elect is back in New York City after a holiday at his private club in South Florida, and he's back to rolling out cabinet picks. Today, he may announce his choice for U.S. trade representative. A member of the Trump transition team has confirmed the pick to several news outlets. Robert Lighthizer is the name. Marketplace's Lewis Wallace is here with more. So, Lewis, who is Robert Lighthizer?
Well, right now he's an attorney in D.C. He represents big companies on trade issues. But maybe more significantly here, he was the deputy U.S. trade rep for Ronald Reagan's administration. And he's pretty closely aligned with Donald Trump on some of the issues Trump has talked about, becoming more protectionist on trade, imposing tariffs on imports, and going after China in particular for what they say is manipulating the system in its favor. Mexico will be a target, too. He's also been a Trump supporter for a while. In 2011, he wrote a column for the Washington Times defending Trump's views on trade as fundamentally conservative and arguing that conservatives haven't always been big free traders and shouldn't be.
Politically, of course, conservatives have been quite pro-trade. What exactly does the U.S. trade representative do?
Well, that's the main trade policy person in the cabinet. He'll represent the U.S. at the World Trade Organization and, of course, negotiate trade deals.
Trade deals that are, I assume, likely to look quite different under the new administration?
Right. So Lighthizer's first order of business could be abandoning the latest free trade deal. That's the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiated by the current trade rep. That was a deal with Pacific Rim nations, not including China. Trump says he wants to focus on negotiating individually with each country.
All right. Well, that'll be a lot of negotiation. Then Marketplace's Lewis Wallace here in New York. Thank you so much. And let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.5%. The Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all up in the 0.75% range, with the Dow future up 148 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is down 2.5%. In some ways, all is quiet on the housing market front. But after the inauguration, a long simmering debate over the role of government in the housing market may fire right on up. Specifically, what to do with Fannie and Freddie Mac. These are the government-sponsored enterprises that try to expand mortgage lending. From our bureau at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
To understand where Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are today, you have to go back, way back, to the Great Depression.
Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime?
Banks were failing, people were losing their homes. There was no money to lend out. So the government created New Deal agencies to try and get housing off the ground again, says Karen Petru at Federal Financial Analytics.
Both Fannie and Freddie were set up to ensure Americans had access to the lowest possible cost 30-year fixed-rate mortgages.
Mortgages that investors knew carried an implicit government guarantee, which became explicit in 2008 when the housing market crashed, the feds took over shareholder-owned Fannie and Freddie and bailed them out with $188 billion of taxpayer money.
So if anything goes wrong in the economy or their housing book, we as taxpayers are back on the hook.
Free market conservative Republicans in Congress and Treasury Secretary nominee Steven Mnuchin now want to sever those ties and privatize Fannie and Freddie. Here's Mnuchin on Fox News a few weeks ago.
We got to get Fannie and Freddie out of government ownership. It makes no sense.
But he was quick to offer reassurance.
We'll make sure that when they're restructured, they're absolutely safe and they don't get taken over again. But we got to get them out of government control.
Though how to do that while keeping low-cost fixed-rate 30-year mortgages is an open question, says Chris Whalen at Kroll Bond Rating Agency.
Just about every mortgage that's originated in this country is guaranteed by the federal government. If you were to change that, the cost of a mortgage for your average consumer would go up several points, be more like 6 or 7%, because private investors are just not willing to take that risk.
Whalen says the political realities of anxious homebuyers, builders, and realtors may temper Republicans' privatization zeal. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Foods marketed as promoting health and wellness are big business these days. Their worldwide sales are expected to top $1 trillion this year. But eating healthy, of course, means different things for different people, including, it appears, for baby boomers versus younger folks. The two groups are helping to drive a growth trend in health and wellness foods, but for different reasons. Marketplace's Andy Baxter has more.
When I met Susan Mueller at a grocery store in the Twin Cities, she was busy reading the ingredient deck on a box of pasta.
It's only 2 grams of sugar. That's excellent. Sodium, zero. Perfect.
Mueller is 62, a boomer, and while she seeks out clean labels and healthier foods, she's less likely to spend extra on organics, unlike her daughter Rachel, a 31-year-old mom.
So I try to go to the farmer's market when I can. I would rather have pesticides-free, and I'd rather support local businesses versus, you know, having imported fruits.
This mother and daughter's differences match what David Garfield at the consultancy Alex Partners found in consumer surveys.
Millennials care a bit more about the origins of their food. Boomers care a bit more about the specific ingredients.
Garfield says in the coming year, food manufacturers will have the challenge of meeting all these different demands, tweaking the ingredients of the core brands that boomers like, while coming up with new, healthy products that young people find authentic. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
There are more than 36,000 McDonald's around the world in more than 100 countries. So why not just outside the Vatican? A McDonald's opened right outside Vatican City last week in a Vatican-owned building over the objections of some residents and at least one cardinal who previously called it a disgrace. But the Vatican's real estate board approved it. After all, there's already a Hard Rock Cafe on the street leading to St. Peter's Square. Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Daniel Shin. Our engineer this week is Jake Gorski. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college accountant? How does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox, and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.